Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we talk with an eyewitness to the bloody carnage left from an attack on a Pakistan university. We discuss a controversy over trying to control a video sharing site online.
In less than 24 hours since the ban being lifted, already we're seeing, I think, significant disagreement as to what exactly this might mean.
We speak with an astronaut aboard the International Space Station and what's in store for 2016 from country music. It's right here on The Voice of America. A gun and bomb attack on a university in northwestern Pakistan today left at least 21 people dead and dozens more wounded, officials and hospital sources said. Authorities said a group of four terrorists stormed the Baka Khan University in the town of Charsada at around 9 in the morning and opened fire on students and teachers. Correspondent Aisha Tanzim has now arrived in the area and joins us on the line. Welcome, Aisha.
Thank you for having me.
Say, what have you seen so far?
Well, I first went to the university where the attack actually happened. We saw blood stains on floors, on walls, in the rooms. We saw actually dead bodies of terrorists that had not been removed yet, and some of them were removed in front of us. We saw shells on the, holes on the wall from the rocket and bullet firing that was exchanged between the militants and the security forces. We saw some students, some security guards that worked for the university. We saw police and military wrapping up. The operation was over by the time we reached there, but the cleanup of the area was already underway. Lots of media was there by the time we reached there. And so we talked to some people there. Now I'm at the local hospital where some of the injured were brought, and I was just talking to some of the people about where they were and how they got injured. And some of them were are telling me that they jumped from the rooftop just to avoid being shot.
What sort of injuries did you see?
I mean, most of the injured here are injured because they jumped. It's mostly fractures because of people jumping from rooftops or windows to try to avoid getting shot at. We talked to the nurses here, and they said two critically wounded patients died earlier in the day, and those who were more critical were sent on to a bigger hospital to the nearby city. Charsada is a small town. The hospital here, at least the one that I can see, does not look like it's well-equipped to deal with something extensive. So the injured here are mostly those that have lighter injuries, mostly fractures.
Is anything special being done to help the survivors and to get more supplies in there?
Well, right now, the whole local and provincial and federal government is in action to make sure those who are injured are given treatment. Like I said, those who were critical were sent from here to a bigger hospital in the nearby city, which is better equipped to deal with these kinds of injuries. The military was involved in wrapping up the operation. So right now, the government machinery seems to be in action. So that's not where people are asking questions. People are asking questions about how the militants were able to enter the university so easily and to carry out a horrendous attack where the final death toll is still not confirmed. We are reporting a little more than 20 people killed, but figures as high as 25 to 30 are being reported by some local officials.
Well, it sounds like a horrific scene.
Yes, it was. It was actually, we entered rooms that were splattered with blood. There were things that I would not want to describe on air or show on air, even though we took video of a lot of stuff. The students that we talked to said that, one student had actually completed his studies and he was just waiting to get his degree, and he was just here because a special program was going on in the university. And ironically, today was an anniversary of Bacha Khan, the person after whom the university is named, and he is well known for his ideology and philosophy of nonviolence. And to have such a violent attack on his anniversary when people were gathered to celebrate his life is both sad and ironic. And so there were students there who had completed their studies, and some of them were waiting for their degrees. So some, I talked to one student, three of his friends died, and he said only a day before they were talking about how difficult the next examination was going to be and what they were going to do to get through, and now today they're dead. So yes, lots of stories, sad stories like that.
Well, Alicia, please be careful out there, and thank you so much for talking to us from there.
Well, thank you for having me.
My colleague Michael Lippin has been following the story on social media and joins us here in the studio. Michael.
Hi, Susan. Thank you. Well, our correspondent Ayesha Tanzim was describing some pretty horrific images at the university. And if you'd like to see some of what she actually saw, you can go to her Twitter account, which is at A Tanzim. She's posted photos of blood-spattered hallways and stairs. Just be warned that those images are rather disturbing. You can also see one of her photos of a room where the students were actually staying when the attack happened, and there's no blood there.
What hashtags have people been using on Twitter to talk about this attack?
I've seen a couple. One is hashtag Bacha Khan University. There's also hashtag Bacha Khan Uni Attack. Hashtag Bacha Khan, he is the patron of the school. There's a hashtag Charsada, the town where the school is based, and also hashtag Charsada Attack.
Well, Michael, what tweets related to the attack have stood out for you?
Well, here's a tweet that got a lot of visibility today. It's from Wasim Akram, who is Pakistan's former cricket captain and a commentator at the Star Sports TV network. His handle is at Wasim Akram Live, and he has 1.9 million followers. And this is what he wrote. I'm saddened to be hearing that my homeland is suffering again and again. Hashtag Bacha Khan University. Hashtag this has got to stop. You know, it's a sentiment shared by many people on Twitter today. Susan?
Thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
After a successful satellite launch and international collaboration of oceanographers have a new tool to help them monitor the rise in global sea level. The Jason 3 spacecraft blasted off from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California on January 17. Jason 3 will further efforts to measure global ocean levels that began in 1992 with the TOPICS Poseidon mission. Over the more than 20 years since such satellite measurements began, researchers say the world sea level has risen by 70 millimeters with an annual average increase of about 3 millimeters a year. The Jason 3 mission is a collaboration between NASA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the French Space Agency, CNES, and the European Organization for the Exploitation of Meteorological Satellites. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Authorities in Pakistan have announced that after 3 years of completely blocking the video sharing site YouTube, they are lifting the ban and will allow Pakistanis to access the site. However, there is already disagreement between Pakistani telecommunications officials and Google, the owner of YouTube, as to just what that might mean and who will have control of videos posted there. International Edition's Doug Bernard joins us. Always welcome, Doug.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Say, Doug, why was YouTube blocked in the first place?
So for those who aren't familiar, there may still be some out there. Of course, YouTube is a video sharing service. There are literally billions of hours of video all stored digitally up on YouTube. You can call up everything from crazy cat videos to old news clips to all kinds of things, really. And so the job of policing it is a monstrously large task that Google, which owns YouTube, has. Now, you may recall 3 years ago in 2012, there was a rumor of a movie that was to be released called The Innocence of Muslims. And many Muslims around the world read about this, saw clips of the movie, and were deeply, deeply offended. And there were riots in many places, among them in Pakistan. 14 people lost their lives following that being posted to YouTube. So at that point, the Pakistani authorities had had enough. They'd always had a kind of hate-hate relationship with YouTube. They decided that's it, and they completely banned it.
And what is this disagreement now?
Well, so the Pakistani Telecommunications Authority, the PTA, says that it will lift the block on YouTube, but with the understanding that they've already reached with Google that there's an expedited process for Pakistan now, Pakistan authorities, to register their displeasure about whatever video that's being posted and to then have it taken down in an expeditious manner. Google, however, has come out, Google authorities have come out and said, no, wait, no such agreement exists, that if Pakistani authorities want a video taken down, they're going to have to go through exactly the same process that every other government is going to have to as well. So in less than 24 hours since the ban being lifted, already we're seeing, I think, significant disagreement as to what exactly this might mean.
Well, this all gets down to what we've talked about before, and that is freedom of speech.
Yes.
And this is something a lot of governments want to do, is have control over these social media sites.
Absolutely. You know, speech is power in many ways. And a lot of governments around the world are not happy with their citizens having that power, having the power to either speak themselves or perhaps share messages, share thoughts, thoughts that may be critical of the government, that may be critical of other things as well. And so there's this constant effort across the globe, really, for many governments to always trying to be restrict or at least control what's out there. That said, the internet is so big that controlling it fully is very difficult.
But it also gets back to the point about terrorists using YouTube.
Well, yes. In fact, we've heard a lot about this. Now, just as a very quick, a lot of ISIS has been very successful using YouTube and other sites, putting out their propaganda videos, their recruitment videos, that kind of thing. And many people have been very upset, and you can understand, rightfully so. That said, those who are saying they want all of these videos taken down, when you actually talk to intelligence officials, they say, no, wait a minute. There's a world of intelligence that can be mined from these video posts and these tweets. And if you simply eliminate them all, you're really closing off an ability to really learn more about how this group really works. So once again, when it comes to social media, you know, these things are double-edged swords.
Yeah, we're learning our way. Thank you very much, Doug, for stopping by.
Always great to be here.
Coming up on International Edition, an outer space experience for VOA listeners and some exciting new songs from country music. VOA listeners, and for that matter, employees here, got a special treat today. We all got to listen in as VOA reporter Ann Ball spoke with astronaut Scott Kelly, who is aboard the International Space Station. Here is a portion of their conversation.
Voice of America, this is Mission Control Houston. Please call station.
Station, this is the Voice of America. How do you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. Welcome aboard the space station.
Oh, wonderful. I wish I could be there in person to do this interview. We had someone from our worldwide audience at VOA write in and wanted to know, from Ethiopia, what is your mission?
Our mission here is to understand the effects, mostly the effects on our physiology and psychology of long-duration space flight, so we can eventually go on to Mars. And the space station is a really unique facility to do this kind of research, and we have it now, so we should use it for that.
What are some of the highlights of your research? What have you found so far?
So there are about 400 different scientific experiments going on here throughout the course of the year, and they're in all different scientific disciplines. Some of them, however, are dedicated to our time on board, and those are mostly related to our physiology. There are issues with long duration spaceflight, and the longer you stay here, the problems that can occur with our physiology increase, such as bone loss and muscle loss, effects on our vision, even our cardiovascular health, effects on the from the radiation environment, things like that. And we've done a lot of recording of the data. Last week we had an experiment in the Russian segment that used a lot of the imaging technology we have here on the U.S. segment, but using their device that puts negative pressure on our body to look at our, you know, the vessels in our head and our heart and our eyes to see if there's an effect on our vision. And all this data that we've been collecting over there, it needs to go down to Earth and analyzed. And, you know, it's really not until the scientists have collected it all will they sit down and take a very close look and see exactly what we've learned and then report on it.
When you look down at Earth and when you look out to space, what do you see?
You do get a sense that you know what's going on Earth and you pay attention to it. And you look down at the Earth. There's a window right down here. And you do feel detached from it. And it does, between those two of those things, just kind of following what's going on very closely and feeling some detached from the planet, you do get a sense that there's a lot of bad stuff going on down there all the time. You know, like the news is mostly bad. And it's, you know, it's really unfortunate and really sad that's the case. It's really a shame because when we do look down at the Earth, it is such a beautiful place. It's, you know, it's our home, and, you know, it's a home that we need to take care of.
Our web folks are going to post the full conversation on our website. So if you would like to hear more, come on by voanews.com. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Every year, Utz Kids eat and drink a whopping 5,543 sugar cubes. That's 22 bags of sugar. That's more than a kid like me weighs.
That's from a British government campaign warning parents about the amount of sugar their kids are consuming. And the campaign offers a free smartphone app that scans barcodes of supermarket items to give an instant readout of the amount of sugar they contain. Dr. Alison Tedstone is with Public Health England.
Children in Britain are eating far too much sugar, three times more than the recommended amount, and that's causing them real harm.
Dr. Tedstone says almost half of Britain's 8-year-olds have tooth decay. A third of 11-year-olds are obese or overweight. Parents say the app is easy to use and helps demonstrate how much sugar is really contained in common grocery items. I'm Martin Seacrass for VOA's Living Better.
With the new year, new music. There was a lot of great country music in 2015, but what's in store for this year? International Edition Sarah Williams speaks with Nikki Strong of VOA Music about some of the most anticipated country music for 2016.
So, Nikki, I already know we can expect a new album from the iconic Loretta Lynn. It'll be her first one in 10 years. It's called Full Circle and hits stores around March 4th. What other country legends are releasing new music?
Well, Sarah, I just found out Willie Nelson, last year's recipient of the Library of Congress's Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, will salute the brothers, George and Ira, with a new album. It's called Summertime. Willie Nelson sings George Gershwin. It's due out February 26th. It won't be a traditional country album, but it should be good, as Willie puts his own touch on Gershwin standards, like It Ain't Necessarily So, and they can't take that away from me. Vince Gill is another icon whose new CD, Down to My Last Bad Habit, drops February 12th. I love that title. Vince consistently produces great quality music, and we expect no different this year. The current single, Take Me Down, featuring Little Big Town, has a sultry country rock feel. He also has a new song with newcomer Cam on it, so I'm really looking forward to checking that out. And another artist coming back from a long break like Loretta Lynn is Wynonna Judd. The self-titled CD Wynonna and the Big Noise will hit February 12th. This will be Wynonna's first full-length studio album of original material since 2003.
Wow. What other country albums by women have fans abuzz?
Well, tons, actually. A couple of them, Brandi Clark. Now, she's a brutally honest songwriter whose single Girl Next Door is a great song that basically says, hey, you want the girl next door? Go next door. You want that girl? Go get her. Bye. So she really has guts and grit, and her CD is scheduled to drop in the spring. Lucinda Williams is another bold, gritty, passionate storyteller. Her CD, Ghost of Highway 20, drops February 5th. And another woman artist I am looking forward to is Aubrey Sellers' debut CD. She's the daughter of Leanne Womack and prolific songwriter Jason Sellers. But she says she has her own sound that she just describes as garage country, bluegrass, and blues songs presented in a new, edgier way.
Well, let's get into the guys. What do they have in store for us?
Okay, they have lots as well. I'm looking forward to Brothers Osborne, Pawn Shop. They're very funky and gritty, and they borrow from a lot of influences, including classic rock and modern country, and they do really good stuff. Charles Kelly of the group Lady Antebellum drops his solo project while the group is on hiatus, and I have loved what I have heard from him thus far. The single Lucky Girl was written with one of the gods in country music right now, Chris Stapleton, along with Chris Frazier, and the title track The Driver is really nice too, and it's done with Dirk Bentley and Eric Pasley, and that album is due out February the 5th. Dirk Bentley, by the way, will be dropping a new album too called Black, which he says will be deeply personal. It's already available on pre-order, but no release date as of yet. And speaking of deeply personal, Blake Shelton will drop his album, and we all expect it to be about his relationship and public divorce from Miranda Lambert. Now, he says this album is going to be very personal, and I can already hear gossip sites right now just dissecting every single lyric. So,
well, thank you, Nikki, for this country music preview. You can find a more extensive list of the most anticipated country albums set to drop in 2016 on VOA Music's Facebook page or via Twitter at @VOA_music. You can also catch Nikki every week on Country Hits USA on VOA 1.
I'm gonna take you for a date, take you for a ride, gonna get you over there on the passenger side. I'm gonna put the radio on your favorite song. I'm gonna crank it on up and get you singing along. Hey, hey.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Libya, the four-year political power struggle following the fall of Muammar Gaddafi's regime split and destabilized the country. On December 17th, UN facilitated political envoys from Libya's two rival governments and a number of independent political figures signed the Libyan political agreement that will form a unified Libyan government of national accord. Subsequently, the UN Security Council on December 23rd unanimously passed on UN Security Council Resolution 2259, welcoming the formation of the new government of national accord and sending a clear message that this unified government will be the sole legitimate government of Libya. The Presidency Council that will lead the new government is currently working actively towards the formation of the new government with the support of the United Nations. To address Libya's threat from ISIL and other terrorist groups, Libya needs a united government. In the past weeks, ISIL-affiliated militants have conducted a number of violent attacks in Libya. In the first week of January, they attempted to capture the Sidra oil port and the nearby oil town of Ras Lanuf, and in the process set fire on a number of oil tanks. On January 7th, a suicide bomber drove a truck into a training camp for Coast Guard cadets. At least 65 people were killed. The United States strongly condemns these attacks and extends its condolences to the families of the victims. Violent extremists, including ISIL-affiliated groups, threaten all Libyans throughout the country. With their attacks on oil fields, they are threatening resources that belong to the Libyan people and that all Libyans must strive to protect for future generations, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. These incidents stress again the urgent need for Libya's new leaders to formalize the government of national accord, as outlined in the Libyan political agreement. This is a vital step to address the country's critical humanitarian, economic, and security challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.